So I want to try something. Think about the last time that you had a conversation with someone where you actually disagreed about something that mattered. And I don't necessarily mean you had an argument. I mean you actually had a somewhat reasonable interaction. You know, where both of you were, for the most part, actually listening. And one of you, or even maybe both of you, actually changed your mind about even one thing by the end of it. I'll wait. Yeah, I'm not really finding one either. And I've been thinking a lot about why that is, because it's not like people just stopped having opinions. I mean, if anything, I'd wager that everyone has more opinions than ever, delivered more with more certainty and more things than ever, which you'd think would produce more conversation, right? But instead, it's produced this well, this rather peculiar kind of social paralysis, where it's like everyone is performing their team affiliation, I guess. And nobody's actually talking to each other. It's kind of like it's like civic life just it got turned into a sport where the stadium's on fire. But nobody will admit that they actually see the flames. And you can feel this in a room. So someone mentioned something. It doesn't even have to be anything explicitly political. It could be about vaccines or the economy or, I don't know, a news story or just a movie, whatever. And you can physically feel the temperature shift in that room. You can sense people calculating and they're running their quick threat assessment so they can decide which side of the line that this person is on before they even finish their sentence. And then, of course, responding to what side or what that side of the line is supposed to believe, not to what the person actually said. And it's exhausting. And I think that most people, if they're being honest, are exhausted by this whole thing. But so the thing that I keep thinking about is that people have always disagreed, right? I mean, that's nothing new. But what is new is the texture of it. I think what's different now is that disagreement has pretty much, it's like curdled into something that feels like a civilizational grudge match or something. And, it's not just a matter of opinion. So, we are at a place now where the other side, they're not just wrong anymore. They are, well, now they're dangerous and they're evil and they're, irredeemably stupid. And somewhere in the back of your mind, you probably feel that they should just be eradicated because they're responsible for everything horrific that's ever happened. Yeah, it's extremist thinking. And I think at this point, we really should probably ask, how the hell we actually got here, because I don't think this happened by accident. I think, for the most part, this happened because division, as it turns out, in some way, is an extremely profitable product, and somebody figured that out a long time ago. But profit is only part of this picture, because I think there's definitely something a little more sinister beneath the profit motive that's even more useful to the people in power. The bottom line is, a divided population is a controlled population. So people who are busy fighting each other about literally everything, you know, about cultural grievances and tribal identities and so forth, these people are not looking upward. And that, of course, has never been a coincidence, not once in recorded history. So, all right. I would say that the standard explanation for all of this, it goes something like this. So cable news happened, the internet and social media happened eventually, and now everyone lives in their own little information bubble, and they can't talk to anyone who disagrees with them. Great. And yes, that's all legitimate, and you know, we'll get to that. But I think the explanation, you know, that explanation is doing a little too much work, because it's putting the entire problem on the technology, which implies that, you know, if we just fix the algorithm or delete the apps, then we'll all get to go back to being reasonable adults who have calm and productive disagreements over coffee or whatever. But I find that to be about as convincing as blaming the fork for obesity. Yeah. So, all right. So here's a number that's worth pondering. By 2022, 72% of Republicans and 63% of Democrats viewed the opposing party as immoral. So not just wrong or, you know, misguided. They viewed the opposing party as cartoon villain immoral. And that's actually up 47%. And, well, it's up from 47% and 35% in 2016, which means that something shifted pretty fast. And the thing that shifted, you know, I don't think it was human nature, because human nature doesn't move that quickly. I mean, human nature took hundreds of thousands of years to get where it is, and it's not, you know, it's not updating its software over a 6-year period because of some bad tweets or whatever. So then by late 2025, only 24% of US adults believe that democracy was actually working, which That's pretty abysmal. Abysmal when you think about it. I mean, that's 3/4 of the population looking at the whole arrangement and just going, yeah, I don't think that this is what it was advertised as. Which honestly is these surface explanations, they're seductive because, well, they're partly true. And a story that's partly true is the most effective kind of story because it gives you just enough to feel like you understand something while keeping you from looking at what's actually going on underneath it. And what's underneath the culture war story is that's a lot less flattering to the people who keep telling it. So, all right, so let me tell you about something that history has made pretty clear at this point, even if nobody really wants to hear it over dinner or whatever. So when the people running things want to stay in power, the single most effective tool that they utilize has always been the same, pretty much the same one. Keep the people below them focused on each other. That's the playbook in a nutshell. It's really not that complicated. It's not even particularly creative. It's just really the oldest play or the oldest trick in the book. And we just keep falling for this every single time throughout history, which at this point, I think it says something pretty embarrassing about us as a species. But then again, what do you expect from a species that spent, 40,000 years painting these breathtaking murals and on cave walls, and then eventually we somehow ended up here screaming at each other in the comment section of a fast food chain's Instagram account. So the Romans had this phrase that you're probably familiar with called bread and circuses, which basically means that you keep the population fed just well enough and entertained enough for I mean, you do that, and for the most part, they won't notice what's being done to them. They're not going to notice the manipulative stuff happening from above. So the content of the circus changes every few decades, or every, I guess, every century or few centuries or what have you. But the function pretty much stays the same. We just, we upgraded, or I guess downgraded, depending on how you look at it, from Roman gladiators to social media, which is really it's really the same thing. It's the same thing, but with worse production values and well, social media, nobody actually dies, I guess, right? Though I guess you could argue that people are just dying inside. Yeah. So here's what the economic picture actually looks like beneath the culture war. So the share of adults that are living in middle class households, fell from 61% in 1971 to about 50% in 2021. And 44% of workers in 2024 were not earning a living wage. The U.S. has the highest homelessness rate among wealthy nations in the world. There are about 50 million people in the USA living below 125% of the poverty line. And yet, somehow, the it seems that the dominant cultural debate is about things like which bathroom people use, and or whether a cartoon character is too woke or something, which is and I say this with complete respect for the democratic process. This is an actually stunning achievement in misdirection. So yeah, great job, ruling class. Well played. Now, I mean, are people angry about the economic situation? I mean, absolutely. And that anger is, the anger is real. It's legitimate. But the thing is that anger, it needs somewhere to go, right? And so if you could redirect that anger toward cultural enemies instead of economic ones, toward the neighbor with the wrong bumper sticker instead of the system that's extracting value from both of you, that's an extraordinarily useful tool if you happen to be running the whole system. Because you don't even have to, at that point, you don't even have to manufacture the anger. You just have to basically hand it a different address. There's this book that was written by Thomas Frank back in 2004. It was called What's the Matter with Kansas? And so in the book, Frank makes this case that working class people were they were pretty much consistently persuaded to fight against their own economic interests by having their economic anxiety reframed as cultural grievance. And so the mechanism that he described, 20 years ago, well, it's only gotten a lot more effective, of course, and more sophisticated. And now it has a social media budget attached to it. So even if you accept everything that I just said about economic misdirection and, bread and circuses and the ruling class having your very impressive 2,000-year winning streak, you still got to explain why it's so much worse right now than it was like even just 20 years ago. And I think the answer to that is it's actually pretty straightforward, even if the implications are somewhat terrifying. Someone built a machine that runs on human outrage, and then they gave it to everyone. So the way that social algorithms work, this isn't very complicated once you understand the incentive behind it. I mean, everyone knows at this point that these platforms make money from advertising, with the advertising revenue being tied to engagement. And engagement goes up when people are angry and afraid, and when they are morally outraged. Because those kinds of emotional states, those are the things that make people click the most, by far. So what happened is the algorithm learned very quickly that division was its most reliable product, and thus it optimized accordingly. And well, by the way, this has been confirmed by multiple studies. So there is this one thing I remember that happened. There were some Facebook deactivation experiments where they found pretty substantial reductions in political polarization among people who left the platform. So, you get off pipe, you get off Facebook and social media, well, then you don't have that problem nearly as much. And it has been shown by research that false information actually spreads 6 times faster than true information on social media. And conveniently, it reaches 20 times more people, which means that the entire information architecture that we're living inside is, it's systematically biased toward the most inflammatory possible version of any given story. And it's not necessarily because anyone planned it that way. It's just because that's what the incentive produced. And then, of course, eventually the people took that and ran with it. So this sort of thing falls under what is known as surveillance capitalism, which is basically, it's the business model of harvesting human behavioral data and then selling it back as predictions about what people are going to do. So, what this means is that your emotional state is a commodity, and while you're outraged, that's like a it's like inventory. And the beautiful thing about outrage, if you look at it purely from a business perspective, is that it's self-renewing. So you don't have to create new reasons to, for people to be angry. You just have to keep showing them the reasons that already exist, and then the algorithm pretty much does the rest. So the part about all of this that I find to be, I guess, especially grim is, you can know all of this. You can understand exactly how the machine works, and it still works on you regardless. Which personally, I find this to be both fascinating and deeply humiliating. I know what's happening when I pick up my phone, and I do it anyway. We all pretty much do this, right? And I realize that that probably says something about me, or about the $40 billion that went into making sure that I would, right? And All right. Look, there is another important factor in all of this that does need to be said before going further here. So some of these divisions are not at all new. Racism and class hatred, tribal suspicion, patriarchy. These things haven't been introduced. These things haven't been introduced into what would be an otherwise healthy system. These things have been cultivated and they've been weaponized by the interests of the ruling class for so long at this point that they're just part of what we inherit when we arrive into this life. I mean, we come into this world already inside of a story of trauma that was written long before we were born. And some of that story, it's so old and it's so deeply embedded that the idea of simply just deciding to overcome it with enough awareness or, I don't know, enough goodwill or therapy, I guess, that's it's a little like deciding you're going to overcome gravity, right? I guess you can work with it. You can try to work with it. You can more or less understand it, but it's not really going anywhere. And I think when we try to pretend otherwise, that's like its own form of misdirection. So here's where I think it might get a little weird, because if you look beyond the algorithms and the economic misdirection I already talked about, some of what's happening isn't just the system running on autopilot or something. I think some of it is definitely being deliberately cooked up on purpose by actual people with budgets and some kind of nefarious agenda, whatever that is exactly. And I know how that probably sounds, but the thing is, I'm not talking about a shadowy speculation thing here. Some of you might remember when this happened. There was this organization, Cambridge Analytica, who got caught harvesting data from, I think it was 87 million people on Facebook. And they were doing this to try to build a psychological profiles for political targeting. And they basically got caught in broad daylight. And of course, almost nobody went to prison, which tells you something about how seriously the legal system takes this kind of thing when, the so-called right people are doing it. And then there was the, well, not too long ago, a couple of years ago, I think there was the Romanian presidential election that got thrown out because somebody ran an influence operation on TikTok. And that reminds me of another incident that comes to, well, yeah, comes to mind. It was, which was, You know, and this wasn't even some fringe group or anything. This is when the FBI, they ran this program for, I think it was called COINTELPRO or something like that. Anyway, they ran this program for about 15 years that was designed to infiltrate social movements, and basically to make people distrust each other and cause dissent from the inside. So, you know, when I say that this stuff is deliberate, I'm not trying to connect dots that aren't there. I mean, the dots basically came pre-connected. You know, we just weren't supposed to look at them. And so the part that I find, I guess, that I have the hardest time accepting is that we have reached this point in our society where we can no longer agree on what's real. You know, we are now having a full-blown metaphysical crisis. This isn't just a difference of opinions about how to interpret events. I mean, people are now operating from completely different versions of what actually happened. And, you know, when you have a civilization in that kind of condition, it can no longer organize a response to anything. I mean, honestly, it can't function. You have to have a universally accepted standard of facts to agree upon to have a civilization that functions. So there's this book that was written by Lee McIntyre called Post-Truth, where he argued that this isn't really about ignorance, what's happening. It's actually about power. It's about the power to make facts feel like they're optional. And so, you know, the thing is once you've pulled that off, you don't need to win arguments anymore. Arguments just stop happening. And the people that hold that kind of tool, that kind of viewpoint, you know, they tend to not give it up voluntarily. So I guess the question now is, what do we do about all this? I mean, is there anything we can do about this? And, well, I want to be upfront about, you know, the solutions part here, because I think this is definitely the hardest part to talk about. Because I think the honest answers, you know, they're actually small. And they're definitely not glamorous, let's put it that way. And we live in this culture where we've been trained to expect that every problem has a podcast episode-sized solution that can be implemented by the weekend, right? Well, I'm sorry to say, but this one doesn't. This one is more like trying to turn around an aircraft carrier with a canoe paddle. I mean, it's not completely impossible, but it's obviously going to take a very long time, and you're going to be very miserable in the process. And of course, there's no guarantee that it's even going to work in the first place. So back in 1954, this guy by the name of Gordon Allport, he established that the thing which actually reduces division between groups is direct human contact. So it's not better arguments or more information. It's just people actually in the same physical space doing things together. And so at this point, that this has been confirmed so many times, since then, that it's basically just an annoying feature of being human that we just keep ignoring. So here's the thing. When we actually know people from the other tribe, we actually become less tribal. And I know that probably sounds almost insultingly simple, but well, here we are. We're obviously more digitally connected and more physically isolated than at any time in our history. And somehow we're still baffled that nobody seems able to get along. And I think a lot of what is passing as political rage these days, underneath, it's coming from something older and simpler, which is loneliness and fear. People who are embedded in real community and who have neighbors that they at least somewhat know, and who have local anchors in something that isn't mediated by a screen, these folks are a lot less susceptible to the kind of manufactured outrage that the algorithm feeds on. So the political tribe becomes less appealing when you already have people around you who actually show up. And so what this does is, it makes rebuilding local physical, mutual community probably the most subversive act that's available right now. And I realize that probably sounds like the least exciting revolutionary manifesto ever written. But the thing is, the people at the top, they didn't spend the last several thousand years dismantling community structures because they were feeling generous. There was this large study that was done in 2025, where I think there were over 80,000 people or participants in this study who found that learning about manipulation techniques in advance makes you harder to manipulate afterward. Now, it doesn't make you totally immune. It just makes you harder to manipulate. And, given where we currently are, I'll take it. So I started this video by saying, I don't think that any of this happened by accident. And I'm going to stick to that statement because the division, it's just too useful to the powers that be, you know, and it just, it runs way too deep. And you know, it serves people who, these people are very good at their jobs, and they're not particularly interested in stopping. Though, of course, I would love to be wrong about that. So what I do think is that deep down, most of the time, the person in front of you is fundamentally, they're not your enemy. Even if they vote differently and believe things that seem completely incomprehensible, because the reality is they're probably exhausted and scared, and they're being fed some, you know, they're being fed a version of reality that was engineered to make them see you as a threat. And of course, like I said before, this has been going on for thousands of years at this point, which probably makes the situation seem hopeless, I realize. And look, I'm not naive. I mean, maybe it is hopeless. You know, maybe this is just part of the human condition now. So I'm not saying that you have to agree with them. And we're not going to kumbaya our way out of this or anything. But I think, you know, maybe it means that the people who actually benefit from us hating each other, they never seem to be in the room when it happens. You ever notice that? Anyway, in any event, the stadium is still on fire. And I don't know. It seems to me that nobody's admitted that they see the flames yet. But at least we know who's really holding the matches. And as far as what we want to do with that or about that, I don't know. I guess, you know, that's still up for debate. So, you know, with this kind of topic, I mean, there's just a lot more that could be said, and maybe there will be a lot more being said in future videos. And of course, I've said a lot about it in past videos, but for now, that's all I've got. So, thanks so much for listening.